Later. We're talking tea today in episode 36 of the Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. But neither one of us is a tea expert, and we just feel like we should let you guys know that. I mean, we're coffee geeks, right? We work in coffee, and that's for a good reason. So we're going to be talking about tea largely from a kind of coffee geek standpoint or a cafe standpoint, because there will be times when even our baristas will ask, like, hey, why don't we go deeper on tea? Like, our tea is pretty good, and we're pretty intentional about the tea we have. We'll talk about that. But why don't we go deeper? Why don't we do a tea concept, like, where that's the only thing that happens in a cafe? So we're going to talk through that kind of tea stuff. But before we do that, we're drinking, per usual. And thankfully, it's not Crystal Pepsi again. Yeah. So today, it was my day, because Christian's been gracious and hit, like, 3 weeks in a row. And I've talked before on the show how I'm a Scotch guy, but I have never brought in a Scotch. I brought in bourbons. I brought in a single grain Irish whiskey once that was amazing. I almost bought that again this week. But today I brought in, like, the staple Scotch for somebody who's thinking beyond sort of bottom shelf, and that's Johnnie Walker Black. So that's a blend of Scotches that have been aged at least 12 years. And with Scotch or with whiskey, it only counts as aging if it's in the barrel. So it lives in the barrel 12 years, and then they blend, and then they bottle. And so Johnnie Walker Black is one step up from Johnnie Walker Red, and then it goes Johnnie Walker Green. No, sorry, we just went through this. Johnnie Walker Double Black, Green, Gold, Platinum, Blue, and so on and so forth. You can't really afford anything beyond green if you make less than $150,000 a year. The black was $30 a bottle. But all in all, I think it's a pretty solid representation of pretty good whiskey, pretty good Scotch. So I brought it in. Christian,
I'm excited to taste.
Taste it. I like this one, actually. And I think it's fitting for Labor Day. I'll say why.
It's like buttery and almost like a cocoa-y on the front. It's really, I hate using the word smooth, but it has, like, a smooth approach, but it comes off with that nice barrel and finish to it.
Yeah, it's hard not to use the term smooth with any Scotch that's decent, because most good Scotches are pretty smooth. I like the black, because it's got a lot going on for a blended Scotch. It doesn't really muddle too much. There's smoke. There's a little bit of smoke in there, and then there's a fruitiness, almost like apples, like the viscosity of maple syrup and apples with kind of a smoky background. It reminds me of, like, sitting around the fire or having a picnic. It's just kind of an outdoorsy Scotch for me. It's not terribly refined. It's not really floral, but it's really solid and works super well for, like, that night around the campfire.
Yeah, this is really drinkable Scotch. I'm not the hugest fan of Scotch, and there's a lot of, like, when you get into peated things.
Like Lafroig or Lagavulin.
Those notes are just, they just hit me the wrong way. This I could totally have seen drinking around the campfire last night. Mm. I'm kind of sad I didn't have it last night.
What did you have last night?
We had quite the variety of beers. Mm. Very good beers. Wisconsin beers.
Nice.
It was nice.
So I recommend this one if you're looking to get, like, hey, I'm interested in Scotch. What's a safe one to try? This one's pretty good at 30. Glenlivet 12. You can find that for about 35. But it's going out. They're releasing a Distiller's Reserve to kind of replace their 12-year-old because aged Scotches are so popular right now. So hot right now. But I heard that the Distiller's Reserve or Distiller's Select, whatever they're calling it, is not as good. So get the 12 if you can. All right, moving on to tea in light of coffee. So it is a coffee podcast, too, so we'll keep it all in perspective. I think we should go through in the form of questions, like answering the questions that kind of get brought up to us.
Both of us kind of have an interesting perspective on tea and tea services. Both of us have worked in the cafe setting, so we kind of know and have a good sense for how they jive together. And as Drew mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we have a really awesome tea vendor that we work with here in Milwaukee. Just phenomenal.
That's Rishi.
Rishi tea. Just down the street from us now, which is pretty rad. But it's always curious trying to figure out how tea meshes with the coffee menu, because they're not really the same thing. Although there's some reason why. I don't really understand why. But it just kind of has become associated. Like, well, you're a coffee shop, you should have tea.
Right, right. And I get it, because people who don't drink coffee will often drink tea. You want a hot beverage in the morning, particularly in the winter. If you're in Wisconsin, if you don't drink coffee, you want to get tea. And, you know, you want a good tea, potentially, so you don't just want to tea bag it on the way out. You don't just want to grab a tea bag. You can't even say the word tea bag. You don't want to grab a sachet and sachet your way out the door. Maybe you want to stop in for that cafe experience, or if you're going for meetings with coffee people, which coffee shops tend to house a lot of meetings, you want to be able to get tea if you're not a coffee drinker. So that's my perspective. Mm-hmm. I think that's why they're married. So how we approach it then, because there's enough of those customers where you don't want to not sort of meet that need. It's like the people who want smoothies or juice. You know, we want to meet that need too. It's definitely not our core product. But we also take a certain philosophy to meeting those needs, even though it may not be coffee, which is our first love and first priority.
Yeah, I was reflecting on this a couple of weeks ago, and I had gotten a question from the podcast, to the podcast, and I answered the email that asked a question like, well, why don't you have a more robust tea program? And the best analogy I can think of is we're kind of really good at one thing. So by analogy, imagine that you go to this really awesome beer bar, like just has the best taps in the world. And, you know, there are going to be people at that bar that don't want to drink the really high-end beer, so maybe you have some Bud Light. But what if you're a wine drinker? Sometimes they have some really nice wines behind the counter, but it's not really an expectation that you should have that really good wine. It really depends on the company or that one shop. If they really care about the quality of the wine, they might just have it around as like, oh yeah, here's your Merlot, here's your White Zinfandel. Like, it's sitting in the fridge, it's been open for 2 weeks, but we have it here. We're thankfully somewhere in the middle by analogy with our tea program. We have it. We're really proud of it. Mm-hmm. But it's not our leading thing. It's not something we do on a regular basis, nor are we a tea sourcing company. So it's another product from someone else that we're bringing in, and we're trying to do the best that we can. And I think we do a good job with our tea program. We actually invested quite a bit in it a couple of years ago to try to understand how to brew tea better. But it's not what we do.
And I think just for clarity, because you mentioned people ask, well, why don't we have a more robust program? What our program is with Rishi Tea, which is world-class tea products, we provide a variety, 10 different varieties of tea for our customers. A few herbal, I think we have one green, black, white. So we kind of offer the spectrum. So if you're coming in and you are a tea person, I'm pretty sure we can meet your need. So what we do is we take loose leaf tea, then we dose it appropriate to the size we serve it, water on tea in cup in your hand, and then you let it steep for however long you'd like. So we don't brew it in big fancy orbs that look beautiful, that take 5 minutes, and then, you know, prepare it with the amount of oversight we do our espresso, again, because it's not our core. We've done what we believe sort of fits our model with tea in a way that represents the quality we'd like to bring, just without sort of the in-depth research care and farm-to-cup oversight on our end, though we do work with a partner who brings that same kind of ethos to their work.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we have actually tried being the fancy tea place. At one of our cafes, we tried going, like, I'll use it, balls to the wall.
Balls to the wall.
And just getting all the fanciest tea equipment. And I remember sitting down with the cafe manager of that cafe. I'm like, okay, we're going to do this really robust program. We're going to do, like, these really delicate teas. We're going to brew it to order, and people have to wait. And it just ended up being another thing that really got in the way of service. It's not that it was bad. It's not that it was good. It was actually really nice. I really enjoyed the teas that we had over there, but it really slowed down service, and it kind of got in the way. And then when the teas run out, you have to go through and you have to update a separate menu, and then scaling that up to 11 different cafes, that just seems super
like
daunting.
A nightmare.
It would be really cool if someone really loved it here and wanted to do that, but it's really just another thing.
Right, and it's a whole other education program, too. Like, if we really wanted to go deep on it, we spend a lot of time and money training our baristas on coffee. And so to add tea or pizza or whatever is a whole nother level of complexity that we have chosen not to... We've just chosen not to go there, and not because, like, oh, we're scared or, you know, we want to sell ourselves short, but we just think we're going to be better and actually provide a better customer experience if we go deep on our thing.
I guess the farm-to-cup story with tea is super complicated and is at times even more complicated than the one that coffee experiences because you can have the same kind of or the same plant-producing tea, four or five different types of teas depending on fermentation, oxidation, all these other things. We've done classes with Rishi that have just been phenomenal. They have been phenomenal. I've learned so much from them. And it's cool to kind of draw analogies to the two worlds, but it's really not, it's not the same thing. It's another set of education, as Drew said.
Krista mentioned the other cafe, or the cafe that we tried to do tea a little bit fancier at. It's also not only kind of a time and logistics nightmare, but we broke the equipment.
Yeah, we broke so much of it.
So the Hario Largo is the tea brewer that we used, and I recommend it, actually.
They're so good.
Yeah, they work really well. I have one at home, and it works really well for at home. But if you're in kind of a rough cafe environment where you're handling a lot of volume, there's a lot of dishes to do, we broke many of those, and they're very expensive. So just be careful if you buy one. We used to carry them, but now we don't because we broke them.
So you were looking at numbers before.
Yes.
And we kind of took like
sales numbers.
We took a representative week, like a couple weeks back, just to see what our tea breakdown looks like. And Drew, what did you find?
So total tea sales, including like chai lattes, which are pretty popular, is 4% of total Stone Creek retail revenue. If you take chai lattes out of that, actual loose leaf tea sales in beverages is about 2.5%. So 2.5 customers out of 100, you know, that's two, maybe four customers, five customers a day into each cafe getting tea. It's not very much. Yeah. So that's sort of like another reason, or it's not only avoiding the complexity of going deep on another product, it's actually the demand isn't there. And I think that's why you don't see many tea cafes.
I was going to say, why do you think there isn't that kind of demand? You see places like Teavana that have kind of been up and down. I think they most recently got bought by Starbucks and have been incorporated in that program. And there are a couple of places down in Chicago that I guess are pretty good. I have never really explored them. But especially Milwaukee, like, why do you think there's no demand for tea?
I just think we want something a little bit more brutal, like a little bit more jolting. And you kind of see this with the light roast coffee, too, is the tastes of the United States are like bam. Like, they don't like subtleties. You know, they want something that's going to wake them up, and that's coffee being that product, whereas tea just doesn't have that effect, both in terms of caffeine and flavor profile that we as Americans tend to like. British, on the other hand, they love that stuff. They also add sugar and cream, do their thing, but whatever.
I have a theory that's kind of based in historical facts.
Oh, go. Let's hear it.
And it's something that I've read a while ago, and I was like, when I read it, I was like, that kind of checks out. So, you know, back during the Revolutionary War, there was the Boston Tea Party, the Revolutionary Army took and chucked all the tea into the Boston Harbor, and they kind of rejected tea as a product. As such, they actually gravitated towards coffee really early on. So coffee is kind of more fundamentally, like, attached to the American, like, stigma, the American experience of having that morning thing. And even to the point where people used to roast coffee at home, like, during the Civil War on a regular basis. They roasted this stuff, and it's just always been around. And I almost feel like, and I'm going to make a generalization just because, based off of my experiences, but it almost feels like the people that like tea a lot are people that have traveled and had it somewhere else and really like the experience elsewhere. Mm. And that's not saying that we shouldn't have it here, but we've had a couple tea rooms in the Milwaukee area, and they've gone under. They've closed or they've gone away. And they're really nice places that have really cool stuff going on, and there just doesn't seem to be that culture here.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, I would say it's a shame. Like, I went to... There's a place in State Street, on State Street in Madison, called Dobra Tea. That's really dope. Like, you go in, take your shoes off, sit in a circle. They got a ton of teas. They're fantastic. It's delicious. And I would love to do that. Like, my wife really loves tea, so that was something we would do together. But the demand for it is just not there to support it. So you almost have to incorporate it with another concept that's going to be the workhorse. And because you need the workhorse, anything else tends to take a back seat. Like at Stone Creek, tea just doesn't get the attention that, you know, in a perfect world, it might get. So, but I would, going back to the tea thing, I've read that and heard that, you know, that in all likelihood, coffee did see an advent in the United States that it didn't have in Britain because of the tea tax and the Revolutionary War. So I think you're 100% spot on with that as well. It's not only is it a taste profile thing, but it's a taste profile that we inherited from years ago. We've just been brought up with it as the staple in our morning, our staple hot beverage, and not tea because of 1775 through 1778.
So why do we offer chai? Why should Cathay offer chai? And I say this knowing that we're going into pumpkin spice season. Mm-hmm. We're going to hit our peak of chai sales in the fall.
Yeah. Well, because people buy it. So that's a good reason to sell it. I think it became popular because people liked lattes. But people don't necessarily like coffee lattes. So they want to get that warm, creamy, smooth, sweet, spicy beverage, and a chai is a really nice, thing. Tastes good. I mean, people buy them because they taste good. They're not quite as harsh or roasty, not as coffee-like as a espresso latte.
That chai latte is almost a dessert drink for me.
Well, so are it's like a pumpkin spice, or yeah, many of our specialty espresso beverages.
Totally delicious, and we use Chai Company Chai right now, mm-hmm. which is just an amazing product. We really, really love that, and I know a lot of coffee shops out there use that as well. It's just bang up really, really good, and we've done a lot of experimentation with different products. Not to say that the other products are bad, but it's just like the right mix of spices for us and our customer base. We just really dig on it.
Mm-hmm. So it's just a simple tea concentrate mixed with milk. Steam to 150, pour it in a cup. You can actually do latte art with those things if you add a little spice, like a little nutmeg or something to the drink right before you pour the last little bit of milk in. I used to do that if customers wanted. Owning that the tea retail market, the tea cafe market, isn't what tea lovers would like it to be, it can be hard then to go to cafes and try and find a place that's gonna suit your needs, get you your fix. So what's a good way to kind of pick out that place, to pick out that cafe? If you are a tea geek, like a tea fresser, you go really deep on tea, then you probably know what brands suit you, what brands you jive on. I would call that company. Like, odds are pretty good that the tea company that you like is pretty small if it's really quality tea. And you can call them and say, like, hey, I live in Arizona and I'm looking for a place that sells your tea, or like a coffee shop. They have lists of wholesale accounts. If that's what you're shooting for, they're not going to shy away from getting you the information you need to buy their tea. So I definitely recommend calling the companies you like to see if there are vendors. Or just call coffee shops ahead of time. Like, you got to go a little bit deeper than just a simple Yelp search. A lot of coffee companies don't list their tea vendors on their website. But nobody's not going to tell you what tea they serve if you just give them a call. The other thing I would ask your barista if you're trying to get a solid tea, is ask how they manage it. Like, at Stone Creek, our baristas can tell you how we dose our tea. They can tell you a lot about the different taste profiles of the teas that we offer. You know, if the barista at the shop you go into can't tell you those things, then you're probably not going to get as good of a tea experience. So, yeah, just don't hesitate to ask. And then you can either tell them to add more tea if they're handling loose leaf, throw in a second sachet, or you just know never to go back there. You had something else on Opsio?
Yeah.
Managing tea in cafe?
Yeah, I was just thinking about other things of complexity, and one other thing that makes tea really hard to do in a coffee shop environment to do it well is that different teas require different brewing temperatures. So this is something I often see when I'm looking at what a barista does or someone's just brewing tea for themselves. I always ask, like, well, what temperature are you brewing that tea at or set at?
Yeah, it's about 185 or so for a black tea, whereas we brew coffee at, like, 203.
Yeah. So I think black can be all the way from 185 up to boiling, actual boiling.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, a green tea is 175 and a white tea is 165. So it's really hard to get that balance down. So if you want a really high-quality tea, like, a coffee shop might not be able to manage that for you unless they have kettles, and then you're going to have to wait for another 15 minutes while the water comes up to temp. It's not ideal service. Up, down. So,
yeah. Now, I bought a green tea from Teavana once, and it was they kind of touted it as a delicate green tea or whatever, and you were supposed to brew it at some absurdly low temperature, like 145. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, it's just a really volatile substance. You're talking about a leaf, not a pit, like with coffee. So I can imagine, just from our experience with coffee, how much of a pain in the neck that really brewing tea super well, or to the extent that we brew our coffee, you know, what kind of work and investment that takes. The upside is, though, that tea's flavor profile is far more subtle than coffee, so even if you're not brewing it super optimally, the flaws in the brewing process are going to be a lot harder to perceive than with coffee, particularly espresso, where you really pick it up quick if your coffee is not brewed well.
Kind of tangent. So we mentioned, you know, that we're a coffee shop, coffee company. We do coffee well. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on what the next other thing in cafes might be that people would be asking for. Kombucha is something that's coming up quite a bit. I'm just wondering if there's other things that you see as well or thought about.
I went to a kombucha bar in Portland, Maine. I was out there last week, and it was awesome. It was super cool. They had kombucha, ciders, and then, like, beer without hops. I forget what you call that.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool place. That's really niche, though. Like, it's really popular amongst people who drink it. Like, kombucha fans get really into kombucha. I really like kombucha. But I don't see it as, like, something that's going to be needed in cafe. One of our vendors is serving a, like, cacao tea. Yeah, so you take the cacao nibs and then you actually roast them and then kind of grind them up to produce more of a tea-based product.
That's cool.
It tastes like dirt. but like cacao-y dirt, so that's better than no dirt, or that's better than just straight dirt, I guess. Yeah, it's really hard to say. Coffee and tea have been staples for, you know, the last 200 years. Tea much longer than that. And I don't see that changing. There's nothing else really in place price-wise to kind of take daily precedent in somebody's routine. Like, coffee and tea are pretty accessible. Alcohol can probably take market share from coffee and tea, but only so early in the day. You could see, potentially, depending on taxation and the economy, you could see a return to lower alcohol by volume beers. Like, beer used to be drunk a lot earlier in the day, sort of pre-prohibition, when you were running 2 or 3% alcohol in your beer. You know, it tastes good. It's really cheap to produce kind of crappy beer at 2 or 3% alcohol. So if the economy were to sort of take a crap, That would be cheaper to produce than high-quality coffee or tea, and we all like beer, so maybe that, but that would be if crap really hit the fan. So that's what we've got with tea. Again, so we're not tea experts.
To recap, yeah, if you are a tea fanatic, look to the tea experts. Really go after them. Like, find a tea company that you really love the same way that you would find a coffee company that you really love. There will be an occasional coffee shop that will be in as much love with tea as coffee. But on a whole, like, for us, we'd recommend going and checking out Rishi directly. And you can get their products with us, but they're the experts. They really know what's going on there. And we love the relationship that we have with them.
Mm-hmm. And they do tours and stuff. And they're really cool people. So maybe one day tea will have its heyday in the States, but we make no guarantees, and we're going to stick with coffee. But if you have other questions about you know, how we handle tea, shoot us an email, podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com. Next week, we're back on to coffee. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about coffee trends. 2 weeks from now, we're going to hit one more thing that I keep seeing, and that's this barrel aging of coffee products, and they call it barrel aging or barrel conditioning or cask aged, and it's like all sounds super sexy and craft, but I think we need to talk about it. We need to do some illumination on this, because if you're familiar with the podcast, you've heard us sort of mention this in passing. There's some things we should talk about in terms of using kind of whiskey and beer terms in relationship to coffee. And we'll explain why. It'll be great. I'm really looking forward to that one. In the meantime, any other topic ideas you have, hit that email address I said, podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com. You can tweet at us, @stonecreekcoffee with one E at the end. If you love us, let us know. It makes us feel good. You can do that by leaving a review on iTunes. Provide some meaning to our otherwise dull and unimportant lives. It gets lonely in this basement where we record. Till next time, we are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.